We'll take a guess that nobody actually likes the sound of an ambulance, but at least when we hear the siren, we have some reassurance that whoever is hurt and needs an ambulance is getting good care. The care itself rests on some basic concepts proven through time, but there's constant tweaking, both to accommodate new understanding of the human body and new technology. People who work in emergency medicine and emergency medical services are highly trained and training frequently. Today's guests recently attended a conference about emergency medical care. Here's our chance to pick their brains about the state of the art in their business. Dr. Paul Rostikus is the supervising physician of Jackson County EMS. He was an emergency room physician for many years. Welcome, Dr. Rostikus.
Thank you.
And also with us is Kelly Harrington, who's a firefighter for Jackson County Fire District 3. Hi, Kelly.
Good morning.
So right off the bat, I was already told there's a bit of a difference between emergency medicine and emergency medicine services, or emergency medical services. Why don't you set those out for us, Dr. Rostikus?
So emergency medical services, or EMS, is really about pre-hospital medical care. What happens before you get to the hospital, that's really what's provided by fire departments and ambulances, as opposed to typically when you speak of emergency medicine, well, it does encompass everything. We really think about it more of what goes on in the emergency department or the emergency room at a hospital.
All right, so EMS gets you to the emergency room. Emergency medicine takes care of you in the emergency room.
Yeah, so EMS is the term, right. Emergency medical services is what it stands for, but EMS is the term we use and most people sort of associate with the pre-hospital care.
And so as the supervising physician, what's your role then? I mean, this is for all the fire districts in Jackson County?
Yeah, so supervising physician is actually the Oregon term. Most other states in the country use the term EMS medical director. I oversee the activity of all the EMS providers in the county, in the fire agencies and ambulance services. Involve training, producing standing orders, overseeing the quality of care, cooperation and coordination between all the different agencies, and then interacting both with state and national organizations.
All right, so Kelly Harrington is a firefighter and I assume emergency medical technician as well?
Yes, a paramedic.
What actually happens when emergency crews are called for a medical call? Because we see both fire vehicles and ambulances out there as well.
Yeah, as Dr. Rostikus was talking earlier, we have different setups throughout the Rogue Valley. We have transporting agencies as well as first responding agencies. A lot of the first responding agencies are fire departments. they show up with advanced life support, i.e. paramedics, and they can make first contact with the patients for anywhere 3 to 15 minutes before an ambulance gets on scene, where we have a nonprofit ambulance company that provides a lot of the transport for their area, as well as Ashland Fire and Rescue and Rogue River Fire and Rescue. So we make the first contact, and we're able to diagnose and help the patient with any immediate life threats, get them packaged, do any quick interventions that need to, and then we can carry them over to the ambulance, the transporting agency, and get them into the hospital.
Packaged in the sense of being prepped for transport?
Yeah, anything that needs to be done that's life-threatening, or maybe getting them on a backboard out of the vehicle if there's extrication in a car accident. We can do 12 leads to look at the heart real quick and make diagnosis on that and then transfer that care just to speed everything up and get them the definitive care that they need as quick as possible.
So if the ambulance folks get there first, though, do they tend to the patient before the first responders do?
Generally, yes. They will step in, and then we will just show up and assist them with right. whatever they need.
So the training then is similar, Dr. Rostikus, between the ambulance folks and the first responders from the fire departments?
Yeah. The training is typically done through their agencies, so obviously every agency has things done differently. But as far as they have the same set of standing orders or protocols that they follow in both sets of agencies throughout the county. The other one is we sort of talked about EMTs and paramedics. There in Oregon, there are five different levels of what we call EMS providers generically, ranging from EMR or emergency medical responder, which has minimal amount of training, all the way up to paramedics such as Kelly, who have significant training and obviously can do a significantly different level of care and different procedures, administer a lot more medications that way. Different agencies have different personnel.
So how do you staff then for situations like that? Because you have to make sure you got a pretty good mix, don't you? Because you want to make sure that you're capable of giving the person in need on scene the most comprehensive care they can get.
Yeah, so all the ambulance agencies in Jackson County, all three of them, as Kelly mentioned, provide paramedic level of service. The first responding, which are fire departments, fire agencies, depending on their finances and their abilities, may have different levels. Many of them, like Kelly's, provide a paramedic. Some of the farther out regions may not be able to do that. They may only have an EMR or EMT, one of the other levels of training.
So, Kelly, as a firefighter and an EMT?
Paramedic,
okay. How much training just goes into the paramedic side of things?
Well, in Oregon, it's an associate's degree in paramedicine, so you spend a minimum of 2 years going through courses, anatomy and physiology. You have a deeper understanding of the body and the body systems, how that work. And then you have a four-year intensive course of just didactics of paramedic care. And then you spend hundreds of hours doing internships, some in the hospital, some on an ambulance, and doing that. And then you become state certified and nationally certified as a paramedic.
In addition to your firefighter training.
Yeah.
And so, that must be also hundreds of hours.
Yeah, a lot of the trend is becoming both firefighter, paramedic, and they've combined two different jobs into one. But as we're seeing, this job is evolving constantly. EMS is changing with the needs that the public is expecting and the things that are coming about as cars change, as humans are into more things. We see more drug problems, we see more fires, we see, different things on a daily basis. So being schooled in both fields is very beneficial for the public.
After all that classroom time, though, getting your associate's degree, once you actually got to do the internships, did your eyes get a little bigger?
Yeah, it's a whole different world once you're thrown out into it. we always talk in training about book work and then real life work. And, it's different when you're reading about a patient for hours and hours, and then when you get there and someone's, bleeding out in front of you, or there's things like that that intervention needs to take place immediately, everything changes.
We're talking about emergency medical services with Kelly Harrington, a firefighter and paramedic with Jackson County Fire District 3, and Dr. Paul Rosticus, supervising physician for Jackson County EMS. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments about the state of the art in EMS. Phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Dr. Rosticus, you worked in an emergency room for more than 20 years, wasn't it?
Yeah, Ashton Community Hospital for about 25 years.
And there was just an allusion here by Kelly to how things have changed over time. Over the course of your time in the emergency room, how much did you see situations change, the things that patients were coming in with change, and the approaches from medicine changing? In 16 minutes
huge.
Or less.
Right, that's huge. There's a number of things that just right off the top of my head. CT scanning is one of the things. Imaging, the beginning, even early on in my time here, but in my training, CT scans were very hard to get. Now we get them sort of at the drop of the hat like we did x-rays. What's happened, I think, in the area in terms of being in Ashland is the demographics have changed. It's become much more of a retirement area, so we see a lot more folks who are older, maybe on Medicare, who have a different set of medical problems that way. And that's, I think, happened throughout the whole Rogue Valley as well. In terms of EMS, I think a couple things have changed. One in particular is what we call systems of care. Rather than just EMS doing their thing and then the hospital doing their thing, that we're really combining and working together. And the two big ones that we talk about for that are STEMI, ST elevation, myocardial infarction. Basically, heart attack would be the familiar word for it. But if someone has chest pain, someone, a paramedic like Kelly arrives, does an EKG, a heart tracing, finds certain things on there, they're immediately taken to the cath lab to have a stent placed, to have that artery opened. And somebody goes home in 2 or 3 days as opposed to what we used to be in the hospital, 2 to 3 weeks or more. That's one. The other one we're really concentrating on right now is cardiac arrest for increasing the survival rate. And again, it's a spectrum of things being done in the field by EMS providers and then getting to the hospital for additional care that is needed.
Here's a chance to explain those two terms separately, though. Myocardial infarction versus cardiac arrest, not the same thing?
No, myocardial infarction, what it really means is heart muscle dying is what it means. And it's typically a myocardial infarction is someone who has severe chest pain and has a, quote, heart attack. Unfortunately, heart attack is used to mean a lot of different things. Cardiac arrest is basically when some sudden cardiac death is another name, when someone just, boom, drops over, walking along the street, riding their bicycle, whatever, drops over, their heart is in a condition called ventricular fibrillation, where it's really not pumping effectively. They need electricity to get it back into action. So they're kind of, they're two different things, but like everything, there is also gray area in between them.
Kelly Harrington, as a paramedic, and having been heavily trained before you even got to touch patients, heavily schooled in the classroom, and then all those hundreds of hours of internships you talked about, does it feel like there's a state of perpetual training and retraining, though? Because, it, I mean, the way you describe it, with new situations, cars acting differently, all sorts of stuff, it sounds like there's always something to learn.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you kind of keep a file and you go through chapter by chapter, and as soon as you get to the end, you start back at the beginning.
It's like painting a bridge.
Exactly. You never know what each day is going to bring, so you're continually preparing and prepping for what you're going to do, how you're going to deliver that care, what's best for the patient, how you're going to carry those things out and see them through to the hospital for the best care that they can receive. So it is a constant state of work, of preparation, and just kind of devotion to training.
And the part about cars, though, because I was curious about this part, because people do things differently. The cars are different. They will respond differently to crashes. Are there situations that are developing now in, the past 5 years that you didn't used to get at all?
Yeah, we're seeing lots of things, especially with the fire department and first responding agencies. We're seeing cars made of boron steel, things that are very, very hard to get into and cut with the tools that we've had in the past. So we're having to change the tools that we use to cut through some of the metal and the steels. And then we're seeing these hybrid cars that carry high electric lines that can be dangerous to us as well. So just being constantly aware and kind of ahead of the curve of vehicles. We call that extrication when we have to remove a patient from something like that, and how they're made and what they're made of. So
with the higher grade of steel, it sounds like it's a sense of good news for the person driving the car because of the fact that it's going to be more resistant to the crash, but then also more resistant to you guys getting in to be able to help the people.
Yeah, very much so. We're seeing a lot of high impact motor vehicle collisions where patients are walking away from. So that's good. The safety cages and things like that are getting stronger. The crumple zones are getting better. They're improving. However, when there are impingements or pins with trees or boulders or other cars, it is becoming more difficult for us to get to that. But with our training and with the technology that we are adapting and that we are bringing into the fire service, it's become very, very it's been expedited, and we're staying ahead of the curve with that. But it's a constant state of that.
You mentioned the high voltage systems. Are those in the newer hybrids and electric cars?
Yeah, a lot of them have the high power battery packs with with wires running throughout the vehicle to power the systems. So just becoming aware of that, and then being able to disconnect those safely and effectively before we actually try to make some interventions.
So you have to know a bit about the vehicles in addition to the people inside them
yeah.
when you get to a scene.
Yeah, I'm just trying to survey vehicles, and it's different because hybrids now are looking a lot like just normal vehicles. So just trying to pay attention to signs and different things like that and some cues that we have. And there's some really nice features out there and apps that people have on their phones or on our computers in the fire engines that we can pull up, and we can see hardwiring of cars and things like that, systems of airbags and things like that. So the companies are very helpful in sharing that information with us as first responders.
Yeah, let me give the audience another chance to join our discussion here on emergency medicine. This is the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Our guests are Kelly Harrington, a firefighter and paramedic with Jackson County Fire District 3, and Dr. Paul Rostikas, who's the supervising physician for Jackson County EMS. Phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, and our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So over time then, and granted, you've been out of the emergency room for a little while now, right, Dr. Rostikas?
Yeah, I stopped working there at the end of December.
Okay, so not that long ago at all. But over the course of the last few years, as the vehicles changed, I mean, as Kelly and his cohorts in the field were seeing different things out there, were you seeing different sorts of injuries in the emergency room?
You know, I think like Kelly said, the biggest thing we see is we hear about what we describe as fairly horrendous crashes that people walk away with and we don't see, or walk in later when, you know, 10 or 20 years ago, we would have been evaluating them and they would have been more likely to have significant injuries going on.
Let's take a call. Here's Wolfgang in Sunny Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Paul Rostikas and Kelly Harrington.
Good morning. I have a specific concern about training. We're not talking Jackson County, we're talking Josephine County.
All right.
I mean, we are out there in the middle of nowhere. We have a local fire department, which sort of doesn't cover us, but by way of interagency stuff, it should be covering us. And what I know is that that fire department is training people who can't possibly be here. They are like in Grants Pass, and they should be in Wolf Creek. And there is lots of training money, lots of training facility stuff, lots of equipment is paid for, and that's taxpayer money. And if anything happens, there's nobody there who's actually qualified. Is there any kind of control or accountability? Because what's happening is that it's like the whole fire department as such is there is a fire department which is incapable of doing anything, and so actually it represents a risk. So I have an accident, I have a heart attack, people come who can't even do anything. I can do it better, you know. I got a suitcase with stuff.
Let's get a response.
There's a risk factor in that.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's find out what we can find out here. Thanks for the call, Wolfgang. I appreciate that. Okay, you don't work in Josephine County. I know Dr. Rosticus, but the question of control that he asked about, is there some supervising state agency that says each county needs X in the way of emergency medical services?
There is a state EMS and trauma office under the Oregon Health Authority, which helps deal with these issues. And you know, yes, Jackson County is next door to Josephine County, so we have some involvement in that. And it's a problem throughout all of Oregon is, you know, where most of the people are is where most of the money is, and folks who live out in either more remote areas, if you want to call it Sunny Valley, if you want to call it out in Harney County and French Glen and Burns. You know, how do you keep the training up? Folks like Kelly will be seeing quite a number of events, of incidents. If you're one of those remote areas, you may respond once a day or once a week, and there are ongoing challenges. There are efforts in the state to try and help distribute that. You know, obviously Portland is where all the people are, is where all the money is, so, you know, a lot of it flows there, and it is a continuing discussion we have at the state level on how to distribute that, because even some of those Portland folks travel to various other places and sort of have an expectation they're going to get the same level of care out in southeastern Oregon that you may not get, that you'd be seeing in Portland.
Because, for example, if you're wounded in French Glen, you might wait a while for an ambulance.
Right? Yeah, three hours.
That long, really?
It's a long drive from Burns down to French Glen.
Oh, that is a big, big set of counties out there, absolutely, and far and few between the people. Are there things that were once standard within emergency medicine and emergency medical service that have been discredited now, that you just don't do anymore, that just changed that fast over, say, 20 years?
There's lots of things. You know, one of the whole things of EMS in general is looking at research. We used to do things in EMS because, we thought that this was the best answer. A device we have called mast pants, kind of a pressure suit you'd put on somebody's legs if they were bleeding out, even backboards, concerned about neck injuries, how we do CPR, as many people have had a CPR class has changed. So, you know, there is much, much more research going on and figuring out what it is that works, what it is that doesn't work. And so, yes, there are a lot of changes that are going on continuously.
Kelly Harrington, given the age and the increase in the percentage of the population that is a senior citizen or getting close to senior citizen in Jackson and Josephine counties, is there equipment that you guys carry out in the field that perhaps might not be there in places where the average age was somewhat lower?
Not necessarily. We carry, you know, advanced life support gear. So basically anything that an ambulance would carry, we carry that on a fire engine, and so it covers a wide demographic of people. There's tools that we use more often in the elderly, things like that, like our ECGs to look at the heart. We can take pictures of the heart and diagnose heart attacks in the field and things like that that are more common in the elderly, but not so much different. We have different bags for different pediatric calls and things like that, but nothing that we would just carry just based on demographic.
I'm glad you brought up pediatrics, because I've seen some of the devices that need to be used in pediatric emergency medicine, and they're much smaller. I mean, smaller masks with smaller bottles for filling the lungs, et cetera.
Yeah, everything is downsized tremendously for that.
And so when you guys all got together, there was a recent, was it the State of Jefferson Emergency Medical Systems Conference?
Right. Weekend before this, the State of Jefferson EMS Conference is what we call it, the fourth annual.
Mm-hmm. What was the hot topic there?
It's a wide variety of topics. We kind of had a focus on trauma, although the purpose of this conference is to provide continuing medical education for the EMS providers in this area of the state, who, again, 300 miles, 250 miles from Salem, from the state capital. It's a lot of traveling, and we also have people coming from Lakeview and the coast and, you know, this is the state of Jefferson that way. So a wide variety of topics, like I said, cardiac arrest and child abuse and disaster management, the whole spectrum of things that is covered in EMS.
Does the state of the art in communications help what goes on in EMS? Because, I mean, you know, you guys used to rely on two-way radios. You got cell phones now. You probably have the potential, anyway, for high-speed internet connections to get more detailed patient information delivered to the hospital ahead of you. Is that all coming into play at this point?
Yeah, it's come into play quite a bit in the last probably 10 years. I'm relatively new to the career, been around for about 5 years. And even just the ability on a cell phone to call an ER physician at any moment and ask them questions about diagnosis or patient care, or, you know, we've given this drug a few times and it's worked, can we give some more? And things like that. So the technology has increased dramatically. Our cardiac monitors that we carry, we can Bluetooth information to the hospitals, so they can get tracings, printouts, blood pressures, anything like that at the same time that we take them.
All right, so a lot more information in hand at the emergency room when the patient comes through the door.
There's many of the vehicles also have what's called MDTs, mobile display, mobile data terminals, which is basically a wireless way to transmit addresses and all that stuff, so you don't have to copy everything, you know, listen and copy everything. It's on a screen there for...
Okay. We've gotten quite an education this morning. Dr. Paul Rosticus is a supervising physician of Jackson County EMS. Kelly Harrington, a firefighter and paramedic with Jackson County Fire District 3. Thank you both for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thanks for having us.
Short break, and then back with Garrison Keillor.